Welcome to the Laura's House podcast series. In this installment of our series, we'll be speaking with Adrienne Natta, a domestic violence clinical educator here at Laura's House, and also Marissa Presley, Laura's House prevention and education specialist, about the teen dating violence and the parent's point of view. Often parents don't recognize the signs for teen dating violence and misinterpret behavior as rebellion or acting out. During this podcast, we'll share the story of one mom named Karen who sought out help for her daughter, assuming she was just being rebellious. Later, after reading an article about Laura's House and the vigil we had for Jackie Villagomez, a teen who died at the hand of her abuser, did she realize her daughter was actually in an abusive relationship? This podcast will also offer advice and resources for parents who suspect their child is being abused by a dating partner. Marissa, I'd like to start with you. Can you give us a better understanding of what defines an abusive relationship in teen populations?
Yes, absolutely. One of the myths of teen dating violence is that most people think that abuse means physically hurting someone, like hitting, slapping, strangling, things like that. What is often surprising to people is that verbal and emotional abuse can be just as devastating and harmful as physical abuse. I'll give you some examples. One of the examples is telling you what to wear or what not to wear, isolating you from your friends and family, name-calling or putting you down, threatening to kill him or herself, or threatening to spread rumors about you. With that said, we don't want to underestimate the physical abuse that many teenagers endure as part of their relationship with a boyfriend or a girlfriend. This is a problem that has had devastating consequences for teens. For example, in September of 2008, Jackie Villagomez, a former student of El Toro High School, died at the hands of her abuser. Jackie was only 19 years old when she was killed. Unfortunately, she's not alone. And we are reminded of this by the recent high-profile cases of University of Virginia student Yeardley Love, who was killed in 2010 by her boyfriend and fellow lacrosse player. There are so many more cases like this, and it leads us to wonder how the signs of this devastating abuse were missed by friends, parents, and teachers.
What is one of the primary reasons that an abusive relationship can occur in teen populations?
That's a great question. Fear and insecurity is one of the main reasons. In teen dating relationships, when one partner becomes angry with their boyfriend or girlfriend because they're interacting with a member of the opposite sex, or they accuse them of flirting with other people, they try to make them jealous, or they give them the cold shoulder, that's a good indicator that the person is frightened and insecure, and that relationship is headed in the wrong direction. Guys and girls alike need to watch for these warning signs, because usually frightened and insecure people often seek power over the other person, and they become verbally or even physically abusive.
How common is domestic violence among teen populations?
Recent federal statistics cite that nearly 1 in 10 teens say that they have been intentionally punched, kicked, or physically injured by their boyfriend or girlfriend. That's 1 in 10 teens. A third of the sexually active high school girls say that their boyfriends have physically or sexually assaulted them. A recent study by Liz Claiborne, Inc.'s Teen Research Unlimited points to some startling statistics when it comes to teen domestic violence. 62% of tweens, those are ages between 11 and 14, who have been in a relationship say that they know friends who have been verbally abused, called stupid, worthless, ugly, etc., by a boyfriend or a girlfriend. 2 in 5, that's 41%, of tweens who have been in a relationship know friends who have been called names, put down, or insulted via cell phone, instant messaging, social networking sites such as MySpace and Facebook. Nearly 25% of teens involved in serious relationships said they regularly received phone calls or texts from their partners between midnight and 5 a.m. Some received 200 or 300 texts a day from boyfriends or girlfriends wanting to know where they were, whom they were with, and why. And up to 82% of their parents had no idea that this was happening. 1 in 5 13- to 14-year-olds in relationships that's about 20%, say that they know friends and peers who have been struck in anger, kicked, hit, slapped, or punched by a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Only half of all tweens, 51%, claim to know the warning signs of a bad or hurtful relationship. 69% of all teens that have had sex by age 14 say they have gone through one or more types of abuse in a relationship.
Speaking of signs, are there specific signs that friends, parents, teachers, and others should be looking out for?
Yes, this is a difficult question to answer, and it presents a challenge for parents, as the signs often vary and can be mistaken for other behaviors such as rebellion, acting out, or even substance abuse. The teenage years are already really difficult, and parents may notice that their children withdraw from the family or take on a different attitude towards their friends, activities, and things they used to enjoy. Their interests often change from week to week or from month to month, which is often just a sign of a teen maturing. Some of the signs that your teen could be in an abusive relationship are extreme levels of withdrawal from friends and friends that they used to hang out with. Perhaps they are ignoring or refusing to be around their best friend. Your teen may also refuse to talk about their relationship and withdraw further from the family, sometimes threatening or actually leaving the family home. Other specific signs to look for include wearing too much makeup to cover up the bruises, or not wearing any makeup at all when they used to wear it all the time, wearing long sleeves or hoodies in the hot weather, constantly making excuses for their abuser's behavior, and panicking or rushing to answer texts or calls from the abuser.
Given that it can be difficult for a parent to identify whether their teen is in an abusive relationship, what should they do?
The best thing that parents can do in this type of a situation is giving their teen a safe place to land. In the case of Karen L., who we will be talking to shortly, she sought help from several groups who told her the best thing she could do to deal with her daughter, who was old enough to live on her own, was to ask her to leave the family home. Karen did this, and it was only after reading an article in the Orange County Register last winter about Laura's house and the vigil for Jackie Villagomez that it clicked for her. It clicked that her daughter was in an abusive relationship. There are many well-meaning support groups and counseling services out there that have been established for helping parents deal with difficult teens. Unfortunately, these groups, they're not always educated or experienced in identifying how to best help parents navigate the challenging world of teen dating violence. In some cases, like Karen's, they may actually lead parents to make decisions that are not in the best interest of the victim. I believe that whatever it is your teen is going through, it is important to let them know that the door is open when they are ready to come home or talk about what they are experiencing in their relationships.
On that note, I think this would be a good time to have Karen share her experiences as a parent whose daughter has been impacted by dating violence. Karen, please share with our listeners your story and how you came to realize that your daughter was in an abusive relationship.
Yes, I will. First of all, my daughter was 19 when this happened, and we had very rebellious years in high school. We thought, as parents, we were diligent. We set rules and guidelines. We just thought she was acting out. At 19 years of age, she had quit junior college and then enrolled in another one. And it was Mother's Day that I met this abuser. Right away, alarms went up in my mind. He called me by my first name. He was very narcissistic, always wanting to talk about himself. It wasn't much later into the relationship. I came home on a Friday, and my daughter was putting flowers in a vase, and he said to me, "I like to keep my women off guard and give them flowers for no reason." Alarms went up on my end, red flags. And then another thing that he did was he was speaking to his own mother on the phone very disrespectfully in front of me, and then went on to badmouth her even more after they hung up. So I knew right away that he was no good. In fact, I stepped into our neighbor's car, and I said there was something I didn't like about him. Well, the relationship progressed to the point where she lied to where she was going to be on over Memorial Day weekend. We got a phone call from him that she was very drunk, an hour away from where she was supposed to be, and that he would take care of her. And my husband and I went into action. There was no way that we were going to let that happen. So we went and rescued her. He was very rude to us, would not tell us where the car was. And again, huge red flags. Being 19 years old and living in our house, we believed that we were setting the right rules and guidelines. We took her cell phone away. We took her car away. Consequently, she ran away. She was gone for 5 days, the worst 5 days of my entire life. I could not file a report until she did not show up for work. Unfortunately, she was an aide where I worked, so I sat outside the place waiting for her to show up, and she did not. Went to the police station. They said, yes, I could file a report, but there really wasn't much they could do because she was of age. 5 days of worst fear in my entire life, I finally, through my younger son, did a search engine on the internet, and we found the phone number of his mother. Of course, it was a different last name. I contacted the mother. She would not let me talk to my daughter. She said that she will come home when she's ready, and my husband and I were floored. My daughter eventually came home. And then I started seeing the signs, a black eye. My daughter was known as Boo Boo, who would have a hangnail in the middle of the night and wake us both up. Bruises on her chest that she wasn't hiding. She was purely disobeying us, not coming home at night, not calling. And mind you, we had two other children in the home, and that's when I sought help from a parent group. And they set me up, and I thought I was doing the right things, a contract. If she didn't hold true to the contract, that we needed to tell her to find another place to live, which is very difficult for me, but they also told me that I had two other children to worry about, and this was truly ruining our family. So I went forth with that and basically kicked her out. Then it began to escalate. She ended up coming back home, moving all her things back home, and not being well-versed in what domestic violence meant, I kept her home, you know, however, gave her rules and guidelines again. She stayed home for about a week. I pleaded with her not to go back to him. She went back to him, and when she went back to him, I guess he had dropped off a file folder of all their communications. I had in black and white in an email that he had copied that he loved to hit her. She had to be submissive to him. He was giving her the medication that he was taking so she would be submissive to him. I became hysterical, went to the police department. They told me there was nothing I could do. She was a willing participant. I went to the pharmacy, and I had the cut-up pills that he had given her, and I said, please, you have to put these together for me. The pharmacist was very reluctant to do it, but he did, and he said that this was a dose for a 200-pound man, and I said, what's it going to do to a 100-pound girl? And he said, sedate her. And I said, like date rape? And he said, yes. I hired another search engine via the internet, and my best friend helped me, and we pulled up all of his background, and he had a rap sheet on him. Little did I know, when I went to drop off her belongings at the boyfriend's house, the stepfather was there, and he let on that this boy was in a lot of trouble but wouldn't say what it was. He said they were much like Bonnie and Clyde, and I looked at him straight in the face, and I said, that didn't end up well. Well, then I knew I was dealing with enablers who this boy had control over. When I went on the internet and found out what his rap sheet was, he had put a baseball bat through his stepfather's walls in a fit of rage. The stepfather had him arrested. The mother bailed him out. He did spend a night in jail. He had to face domestic violence charges, brandishing a weapon, had to pay restitution, was on unsupervised probation, et cetera, et cetera. Also had two or three pages worth of traffic violations, three of them driving in excess of 100 miles an hour, And as I looked into it, he appeared in court, you know, trying to beat the system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, now this was really tearing my family apart. I became hysterical. I tried every avenue, and I just kept getting shut down. It went to the extent that a family member went to, they had now been in an apartment that his grandparents provided for them. Incredible enablers everywhere I went. A family member went to try to speak some sense into her, and the abuser recorded the phone call and pressed charges and put a restraining order against the family member of mine, and which further drew the family apart. I went to the hearing, hopefully trying to get some results or make the court system understand what a domestic violent relationship she was in. It was a commissioner that day, and it happened to be over the 4th of July, and they went to mediation, and the abuser would not settle for a mediator, called my daughter in as a witness. My daughter's body language was so blatant. She was shaking. She would not look at us. The other family members were there hoping they could, you know, sway her one way or the other. The commissioner actually read the transcript of the phone call, and it read, "You little blank, come on out. You like to hit women, face us." The commissioner read that in court, put the person it was against, tried to say that it wasn't him. The commissioner slammed the gavel down and said 3-year restraining order against my family member. The rest of the family members became hysterical, left the court. I went up to the bailiff and said, "Could I speak to the commissioner?" And he said, "No, it's been decided." And he looked at me pathetically and he said, "Is this domestic violence?" And I said, "Yes." And all he did was shrug his shoulders and said, "I'm sorry." Again, once again, I was turned down. Make a very long story short, this has been going on for 2 years. Right after that incident, my daughter sustained an injury to her finger. Tried to tell me that she cut her finger on a glass. She sent a picture to me. My husband went to the hospital to give her the insurance card. She was still covered by our insurance, and we didn't want anything to happen to her. You know, even though I was supposed to cut off ties via my other parent support group, I couldn't physically do that. It turns out that my daughter's injury required 2 hand surgeries by a hand specialist. She cut 2 ligaments and a nerve. My daughter can still not straighten her right index finger. When I looked at that picture, it clearly to me was a defensive wound. I could not get a person to listen to me. That day, I was reading the newspaper, and to back up a bit, my husband even got to the point that he said that I needed to see a therapist because I was just carrying this too far. I did concede. I saw a therapist twice, and I finally said, "I can't have a relationship with my daughter. This is killing me." The therapist said to me, "Fine, you've appeared to make up your mind. You're not abandoning her. You're setting limits. But what are you going to do if she dies?" I couldn't handle that. I went back to my support group. They said, "Wow, Karen, you're a different person. You know, you've made a decision. This is really good. You know, you can get your life back together for when she comes back. You'll be healthy." But they said, "What are you going to do if she dies?" That was not an option for me. Cried all the way home and decided I needed one more avenue, and that's when Laura's House came in. I read the article, knew that I had to give it one more try, came to Laura's house, and that's when I was met with success. They told me they would help me. They told me that, first, did she have a soft place to land? And I said, "No, I kicked her out." "No, no, no." That day, I turned her room back into her room, put all of the pictures up, even though I had changed it into a guest room, called a dear friend to help me, we made it feminine again. I put a lot of her memories in there that were so painful for me, turned it back in, spoke to her, told her to meet me for dinner, told her that I had made mistakes, wasn't totally withdrawing, but I said, "The biggest mistake I did tell you, you had no home to come to." So from there, we established a relationship, and I'm very thankful for Laura's House to give me the education that I needed. So I hope I can help another person with that information.
Karen, thank you so much for being here and sharing your story. Adrian, as a clinical educator at Laura's House, perhaps you could share some tips on what parents like Karen can do to prevent their teens from entering an abusive relationship.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, Karen, for sharing your experience. I think that the greatest desire of most parents is to protect their children. And while this is a high priority, sometimes there's only so much one can do to accomplish that. The teen years can be an extremely difficult time for parents. Their teens are seemingly more independent or attached to their friends, and as such have greater freedom and access to outside influences. Actually, there is an interesting book by Dr. Gabor Mate and Dr. Gordon Newfield that describes the dynamics of peer orientation present in today's world. The book is entitled Hold On to Your Kids. The authors hypothesize that children are having more problems because they are attaching to peers more readily than adults. The structure of the family has changed over time due to stress experienced by parents, especially single parents, in a society that does not provide sufficient community support. The message of this book is, parents, spend more time with your kids. Of course, this is not always possible or realistic with the pressure of work schedules and such, so kids end up spending more time with other kids. Ideally, adults should be teaching children about relationships and behavior, not other children. When it comes to teen dating violence, perhaps one of the best things a parent can do is talk to and educate their teens on the dangers that are posed in relationships when one partner becomes controlling or abusive. It's important that when having these conversations, you let your teen know that you are a valuable resource for them and a non-judgmental listener. The last thing you want is to get angry during this conversation and blame or shame them for what is shared or threaten to expose something they have shared in confidence with others. Additionally, from a broader perspective, and I think of most importance, is that children benefit from parents modeling healthy relationships themselves. Children are more likely to mirror their parents' behaviors and moods as opposed to just following solely what they say.
When, where, and how should a parent initiate a conversation about dating violence with their teens?
Well, it's best to have this conversation away from other people, with perhaps the exception of the teen's other parent or guardian. Take the conversation away from other siblings and things that are a distraction to both of you. You can go to a local coffee shop or a park, but make sure it's a place where you won't run into someone you know. And depending on the personality of the teen, it may be a good idea to have a conversation while doing something active, like walking or cooking. You want to make sure that the conversation is productive. So as mentioned previously, ensure that you are non-judgmental and provide constructive feedback on some of the strategies and tactics that they can use to confront the problem. You can also share your experiences from when you were a teen, some of the choices and or mistakes that you made, and how you were able to learn from them. Sometimes using storytelling can be a very effective way of sending a message. Putting yourself in their shoes and showing that you understand and appreciate the situation can provide guidance to them as well.
What should a parent do if their teen approaches them first and wants to talk?
Well, probably the first rule of thumb is whenever your teen comes to you and wants to talk about something, drop everything you are doing and give them your undivided attention. Some teens won't be as direct as saying that they want to talk and may hang out around you but not necessarily say anything. They also may say they are sick when there doesn't seem to be anything physically wrong with them. Your teen may also try to get you alone, offer to go to the store with you or run errands. these are all signs that they want to talk to you, and you must take advantage of this opportunity. They may be afraid to approach you in fear that you may confront their abuser, their abuser's parents, or tell their teachers or principal at their school, so it's important to be sensitive to this.
If a parent discovers that their teen is in an abusive relationship, what's the best way for them to cope with this?
Well, I know this is easier said than done, but I think it's important to stay as calm as possible and try to respond rather than react. Parents can be highly reactive while emotional, which may end up pushing the child away and blocking further communication. In order to address the problem, the parent and teen must have mutual respect and trust, even when the parent is establishing boundaries. Each situation is unique, so before acting on this information, parents should contact local organizations that offer resources for those who are affected by domestic violence. It would be helpful to meet with a therapist who has experience with teen dating violence to process emotions and come up with an action plan. Laura's House offers its Healthy Emotions and Attitudes for Teens in Relationships, otherwise known as HEART, program for teens, which educates teens on healthy relationships and conflict resolution skills. I will turn it over to Marissa, who can share more about this program.
Thank you, Adrienne. Marissa, tell us a bit more about this HEART program.
Yes, thank you. The HEART program is a great resource for both the teens and their parents. Our workshops on healthy relationships have been held at numerous schools and youth facilities in Orange County. And during the year 2010, the program reached more than 2,500 students. In addition to our outreach programs, Laura's House also offers Heart Strong, a weekly support group for teen boys and girls at our Counseling and Resource Center in Ladera Ranch. Each week, the group discusses a different topic related to dating violence and healthy relationships, including defining domestic violence in families, media portrayal of relationships, identifying red flags for domestic violence, healthy dating relationships, boundaries and communication, managing anger and conflict resolution skills, self-esteem, and safety planning. Also, our Creative Heart Teen Group is a closed group. It's for teen girls whose lives have been impacted by domestic violence. The format of this program enables teens to be more fully recognize signs of abusive behavior in others, and it provides tips on how to set up boundaries in their abusive relationships. Each session includes an art project and subsequent discussion to both educate and empower teens to develop healthy relationship skills and end the cycle of violence in their own lives. Laura's House also has a website designed to assist teens who are seeking information on healthy relationships. Teens can visit www.laurashouse.org, Laura's House Teen, for more information. They can also become a fan of Laura's House on MySpace and Facebook and learn more about our programs through videos posted on YouTube.
Can you recommend any books or other resources that provide information on how to better cope with teen domestic violence?
Yes. Two excellent books that I have read myself are But I Love Him by Dr. Jill Murray and Tornado Warning by Elin Stibbins Waldahl and In Love with Danger by Barry Levy. These books are available from local libraries and booksellers, as well as online at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Before we conclude this podcast, can you please tell me about Laura's House and the programs and services the organization provides to victims of domestic violence?
Yes, Laura's House is a community-based nonprofit organization that empowers individuals and families to lead violence-free lives. We offer a comprehensive range of services, including safe refuge for women and children escaping a violent home. We also offer legal support services, counseling, community education, and prevention workshops for teens on healthy relationships and dating violence. The inception of Laura's House was inspired by a true story about a woman named Laura from Orange County who was a victim of domestic violence. Unfortunately, the end of her particular story is a very tragic one. Her life was cut short with her untimely death at age 38. Since 1994, Laura's House has continued to grow and offer a multitude of programs and services which provide vital support and education aimed at avoiding such tragic circumstances from ever occurring again. Our mission is to change the social beliefs, the attitudes, and the behaviors that perpetuate domestic violence, while at the same time creating a safe space in which to empower individuals and families affected by abuse.
How can someone learn more or get involved with Laura's House?
You can learn more by logging on to our website at www.laurashouse.org or by calling area code 949-361-3775. Women and children in need of emergency shelter can call our toll-free 24-hour hotline. It is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That number is area code 866-498-1511. Our counseling and resource center can be reached at 949-361-3775.
That concludes this installment of the Laura's House podcast series. Thank you for your time today, Adrienne, Marissa, and Karen.